easy. That's the energy we're on.
I like that energy.
This not only today, but all month long.
All month.
Welcome to another week of the We Sound Crazy podcast.
Oh, yes.
We're back in the building, people.
Happy to be here.
Happy to be here. Philionaire Thornton is in the building.
Claude Kelly, no relation to R, is in the building.
And Chuck Harmony is definitely in the building.
And wow, we're in September, which is Gospel Music Heritage Month.
Yes. Yeah, man.
Yes. National celebration.
Yes.
We have the privilege, the honor.
Yes.
To have a living legend in our presence on this episode.
You know how we do.
An ambassador.
Ambassador.
Doctor, educator, television host, radio personality, entrepreneur, philanthropist.
Singer.
Singer.
Trailblazer.
Grammy Award winning singer.
Yes.
Grammy
Award winning.
Yes.
He had the longest running show, not only on BET, but also the longest running series on cable.
Cable.
35 years.
It's crazy.
That's a receipt.
That's a receipt.
The longest receipt.
The longest receipt. That's a CVS number receipt.
CVS receipt.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise for Dr. Bobby Jones.
We are so honored to have you here, Dr. Bobby Jones.
Yes. Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Now, we're called We Sound Crazy because anything goes. So that the Hawkins right there.
Yeah, man.
It's crazy how things, you know, you realize how long something's been out, but when things like still feel like that now,
yeah,
that feels as good as if it came out yesterday to me.
The dynamics, man. Like when it started big, and then when the verse came in, it just went down.
Pulled back.
You know what I'm saying? And then it built back up. That's what we need, bro. We need those dynamics. Oh.
That's one of the groups that Edwin and Walter and Andre Crouch, those were the ones that I really was attracted to when I first started in this career.
Really?
Yeah, those three. That was the kind of sound, the kind of mood, the kind of inspiring that they brought. And then they were classy guys, you know. I don't mean to say that.
Others were not. they had a flair.
Yeah, they had a flair. California folk.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a documentary have you seen this documentary called The Jesus Music?
Mm-hmm.
It's about like the birth of Christian contemporary music,
mm-hmm,
and it's mostly white folk in the movie, but they make concerted effort to spend a good chapter on how the Hawkins family were the biggest part of integrating it, representing other black people, alternate lifestyles. But it was so interesting because especially Oh Happy Day is so, it's synonymous with, it's been in movies, it's been redone so many times that you forget the origin of what their church was, what their movement was, and it was really radical.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't, as a group or whatever, when you go to Europe or other nations, across the world, if you don't do a happy day, they're not pleased. You know, and we've been down just about every one of them, every one of those major countries in Europe and around the world, and that's what they like.
They want Oh Happy Day.
Give them Oh Happy Day, and that's cool, you know. Mm.
You know what's crazy? Because when I think about our partners at the National Museum of African American Music here in Nashville.
Nay, ma'am.
Dr. Jones, and the gospel, well, I guess the Wade in the Water exhibit, the gallery, there's like an interactive moment inside the museum where it's Dr. Jones and the super choir, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just so...
That's one of the most fun parts of the museum.
So fun. Yeah. But Oh Happy Day is the song, but I've seen so many people butcher. Like, oh my God, I don't think they knew this was about to happen in this room. But
that song's been butchered many times.
Yes, it has. But one of my favorite, I guess, renditions of it is Sister Act. That's when I think of Sister Act too.
Yes.
Yeah.
With, who's that, Ryan Tobey?
Ryan Tobey. Yeah. Man, he hits the high note.
Yeah.
Who else was in that?
Tanya Blunt. Who's now in Warren Treaty.
Yes.
Shout out Warren Treaty.
Local black people in Nashville, Tennessee. Shout out Warren Treaty. But yeah, that song took on a second life during Sister Act 2 because I remember I was just a kid going to see that movie in the theaters and I had no idea what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just blown away. And then I'm sure most kids aren't this way, but we're music nerds. So I ran back and did all the homework to see where it came from and all the details.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I read album credits still today, to this day. I need to know who mixed it, who produced it, who played guitar, who wrote it, what label it was on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a music nerd. I am good for you. A proud. I mean, I think y'all being quiet, but y'all are as equally as nerdy as I am.
I'm proud of it. I'm proud of my NERD.
Yeah, I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I do the same thing for movies.
Oh, really?
I always wait to see the credits. Yes. Mm. Because you know, most people leave out of the
theater. They leave at that time.
When the credits start running, they go, okay, I don't know these people and I don't care.
Not interested.
Yeah. Dr. Jones, speaking of movies, I didn't realize this until I read your book. What's the title? I don't want to mess up. I want to gangster you love. Make a Joyful Noise. Mm-hmm. When you in your book, you mentioned, speaking of movies, Maya Angelou was like responsible for like one of your first roles in NBC. Made a TV movie of the week called Sister Sister.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, I think it was like Diane Carroll was in there, Irene Cara, Paul Winfield, Rosalind Cash. And I'm like, how iconic? I never knew. Dr. Jones was in there acting.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know.
Surprise.
But how legendary an NBC movie, Dr. Jones, connected by his friend Maya Angelou, who wrote the movie, right?
Yes.
Wow. That's
crazy. Yeah.
She's one of my dear friends. They were taping in Alabama, and the church choir they were going to use in the movie, and they couldn't get it together. So Maya called me in Nashville and said, "Hey, we need you. We need somebody to come in here
and fix
this thing for us." So I took about 8-9 people with me to Montgomery. That's where they filmed it in this church there. And we did a couple of traditional gospel songs, mm-hmm. and that's how I got included in that movie situation. Maya was a good friend of mine. Maya Angelou is one of the greatest women. Man, I tell you, she was so impacting on her lifestyle and her knowledge and all that. It was made an indelible impression on me forever. But she included us in that particular movie, and we appreciate it. But she was one of my best friends. Mm. Yeah.
Legend.
Legendary.
But legends hang with legends.
Yes. Because you met Maya in 76-ish when you were at TSU, I read.
So you read my book.
I read your book. You were, because he was at teaching at TSU, getting his doctorate at Vanderbilt, mm-hmm. and also producing 2 TV shows here locally in Nashville at the mm-hmm. time. So, but I want to go back to that moment, Maya Angelou, for the people who have not uh-huh. read the book.
Okay.
What was that initial interaction with Dr. Angelou?
When I first met her?
When you first met her.
I was a teacher there at Tennessee State University, and she came for the reading department, the department I was in. Wow. So I didn't know her. But I sat where I could get a good view of her, you know, the people. And she kept watching me, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm saying, this woman is looking at me, you know, not for any other reason, but just curious.
You never know.
So at the end of her presentation, the lady who was over at our department said, come to our suite. Mm-hmm. When it was over, so I did. And so we engaged in a small, light conversation, and the lady said, well, she needs a ride to the airport in the morning. Would you take her? And I mm-hmm. said, sure, I'd be glad to. So I did, and I told her that we had a new project out and stuff. And the next 2 weeks, she called. Mm-hmm. Bobby Jones, this is Maya Angelou. I said, it's Dr. Angelou. Calling me? She said, yes, my dear. I want you to come to Los Angeles. I'm giving my aunt a special presentation. And I want you and the choir to come and sing, because we're getting ready to do a movie and we want you as a part of what we're doing in Los Angeles. So we got on a bus and rode across the desert, and the air conditioning went out.
Oh, my Lord.
But it didn't matter. We were so excited to go to California to be with my Dr. Maya Angelou. So that was my first encounter with her. The movie, the presentation that we did for her was excellent. And from then on, we became like one. Every time her birthday happened, every time Thanksgiving came around for 25 years, I was there.
Really?
Yeah, I was there. And all the major stars, Oprah included, of course, were there. It was about 80 of us every Thanksgiving for 25 years. Yeah. And she would have a couple of people to say some things.
Yeah.
But she would always call on me. Bobby Jones, come and say something. And then she would tell them a little bit about the movie, Sister. Mm-hmm. And I had a little short girl in my group that had a big mouth. She could sing holler loud. And Maya would imitate her, you know, as how she reacted to her in that particular movie. But that was a heck of an experience. And then from my house to her house, she would come to Nashville. In fact, I have her shoes, her dresses, and things that she would leave in my house.
Really?
Yeah, and I wanted to take them to her. And she said, oh, no, you don't do that. I must come back and get them. You don't bring anything to me. She was just so philosophical. it was interesting how we developed that kind of relationship. And I even sang at her home going.
Mm-hmm. That must have been hard, though.
It was.
Yeah, I can.
That
must have been hard.
Yeah, I told B.B. Winans, he was there. I said, look, you're not the one. You happen to know Oprah, okay?
right. You're not the one.
We sound crazy.
People all over the world now. Join in.
Love ride.
Start a love train.
Love ride.
Love train.
So I know y'all like, okay, it's the Gospel Music Heritage Special Edition, but the OJ's Love Train, what I just played.
I love that song.
Dr. Jones, I know that song has a different type of meaning for you because I know there was a choir some years ago that you named Love Train.
Yeah. Really?
You are too smart.
It's Phil, your name.
Yeah.
Phil, you be knowing.
350 singers was in the choir. People from all different types of backgrounds.
Right.
Just people.
Yeah, just people.
Just people.
Coming together for one common purpose. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, Love Train. I said, that's just, I had to.
I love that.
That is so iconic, but. Talk to us about Love Train, the choir.
Well it was, we were trying to formulate some kind of organizational presentation in this city, excuse my language, that would bring people together. Mm. And I had gone to James Cleveland's convention, and I had seen some of the other kind of groups that they would bring in, you know. And I said, well, we got all these singers in Nashville. We should do something similar to that. So I took that concept to my people, and they said, let's try it. And so we put together four different major gospel presenters here in Nashville. And I said, what we should do is invite people to come to these concerts, and then let's raise money so that we can help the indigent people that live in our community. Mm-hmm. And so we did, and it became just massive. You couldn't get in the buildings, you know, because there's so many people tried to come. But the buildings that we used at that time were not so big. Mm-hmm. So if you got 200 or 300 people in one of the buildings. That was something, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, you know.
Now you'd be a bridge zone.
Yeah.
Right.
It'd be the arena now.
So I thought of, I said, okay, this should become something that we can share love with one another.
Right.
So let's call it Love Train.
I love
and
that.
And they said, okay. So when I put the choir together, they, it was that many in the choir.
Yeah, 350.
And so I had them to put their hands on the shoulders of the person in front of them and go down the aisle and march in. You know, they don't march in anymore.
No, they don't do that no more.
And so all of them marched in with it, and the church would just go crazy. It was very interesting.
That's incredible, but that's where you met this young news anchor by the name of Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
She used to come to the Love Train events.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on.
You strung, another receipt. Wait.
Because you strung that together so smooth. So let me just reiterate to make sure I'm following correctly.
Okay.
So you're, which is the genius idea, you put 350 people in a choir,
mm-hmm.
packing out places,
mm-hmm.
and Oprah was basically... the Oprah Winfrey would just come as, I guess, a fan or just a, or not even a fan, but just
she's
to come
a local
in,
Nashville
a local.
Anchor, right?
Yeah, she was a news anchor.
Unbelievable.
At Channel 5 here in Nashville.
Unbelievable.
And she threw it out to the people when they went back. She told her assistant, person that worked with it.
Yeah.
Well, I went to this church and they were doing Love Train and it was an explosion. It was a gospel explosion. I utilized that. I took that. <He's> like,
she does have a way with words. Yeah. So, yeah. Right.
And so I started calling the things that we did. I had another kind of organization where I brought the singers together and all people in the industry,
mm-hmm.
and we called it Gospel Explosion. That was because of Oprah. How about that?
Wow.
See, it's so funny because remember we were saying, especially during the pandemic, right,
mm-hmm.
that I was saying how much I missed choirs because when you're forced to be isolated, then you really don't understand how important it is, what bands are, what churches, what community is, what choirs are, the power of people singing together.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're in the music business, there's the business of music that takes away a little bit of the joy sometimes because you're thinking about the other things. And I was saying to Phil and to Chuck and a bunch of other people I know around town that it'd be great to just get together, no agenda, no ego, and just get in your section, soprano, alto, tenor,
yeah,
and just sing the way, for the freedom and for the to the glory of God. Like, I miss that. I miss that feeling. So maybe this should be a new gospel explosion.
We need to do
it. We need to do it again.
Yeah, need to do it again.
Because there's so many singers here. There's so much brilliant talent, and there's so much that more powerful it can get if we kind of get back to that core of what it's about.
Would I qualify to be in the choir, though? I mean, I'm not really the most vocal. I got a lot of gifts.
All are welcome.
All are welcome. Wow. Okay.
Do you sing, actually?
I can't sing. That's what we were just talking about before the show. They think, what did you say, Claude?
You sound like your timbre of your voice sounds like you can sing. I think you just need to get some voice lessons.
Wow, funny enough, that's what Stevie J always says to me. Shout out to Stevie J.
Stevie J knows singers as well.
Stevie said, Phil, you can sing.
I'm telling you, you can sing.
And I was like, nah, I don't know.
Who would Phil sound like?
I sometimes say, if you could sing, who would you want to sound like?
For me, Luther Vandross.
You do not give me Luther Vandross. Get out of here.
You asked me that one. You asked me who would I want, okay? If God said, you can sound like this one, it would be Luther or Donny Hathaway.
I would give you Donnell Jones.
Who is Donnell Jones? I might pick up on that Jones part. Who is Donnell?
Donnell Jones was an R&B singer back in the 90s. 90s, early 2000s?
Yes.
He was very popular?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had
popular.
He was signed by L.A. Reid and Babyface.
Yeah. You
remember the song? Oh.
He's looking at you like, I don't know what you're speaking of right now. Sorry to this man.
Me and my niggas be on
the road. Me and my what? Come on. What did he say?
He said what you thought he said.
Stop laughing and tell me what he said.
He said, me and my niggas be rolling. That's what he said.
That's how the verse started, yes.
So you didn't want to say that again. Okay, good. Okay. But at least it's some wax.
Yeah, it's on wax. Yeah. That was a big
hit record.
It might be your cousin.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Phil, you look like you sound like that.
Wow, so I look like I sound like Donnell Jones.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I give you Donnell.
Okay, jeez. Yes.
Well, that was a good selection if he sounded like that. I just didn't know who he was.
He can sing. Yeah. I'm going to say it's around the same thing, Donnell Jones. Maybe Tony Thompson.
Wow. I like Tony.
Tony Thompson from High Five.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You know who I'd like to sound like?
Who?
Rance Allen.
Rance Allen can sing. Another legend.
Oh, man.
Listen, Rance.
Rance came on the show, I'm sure, a number of times on Bobby Jones Gospel.
Right? Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And he's like none other. He was.
Well, yeah.
Man. Yes, I have it on to you. I'm yours all alone.
Man, Rance. Man. Rest in peace, Rance Allen.
Yeah.
Let me just say that out of all music, and I'm not just saying that because of what month it is, but out of all music, gospel music is the most powerful music because it has little to do with entertainment and more to do with what you're feeling. You know what I'm saying? Being able to speak to people's souls directly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that should be stand on a pedestal all its own. It shouldn't be mixed in with other genres. It should stand on a pedestal. Plus, a lot of the genres come from the influence of gospel.
All of them.
Yeah. All of them come
from gospel.
But you know, something's happening right now that I'm just disturbed about, and maybe I shouldn't be, but we're losing the traditional sound of gospel music as far as recordings are concerned. And I don't think that's fair to us. And it should be up to us to keep it alive.
Right.
Like the other genres do. You know jazz when you hear it, all the other ones. But now we've moved into another phase with these new artists, and they have a right to do whatever. But we got to do something about that.
I agree.
It should be a more of a balance. I completely agree with you because even I think about the Stellar Awards a few months back. It was, again, we celebrate the Stellars. For those who may not know, the Stellar Awards is like the big award show celebration for gospel annually. Mm-hmm. It just felt super urban and contemporary, and you didn't have the balance of choirs and quartets and traditional. Right. It was just it was all kind of skewed a certain way, and it's just
is it a money thing? Like
yes and no, but it's the artist and it's the record labels you are.
Phil,
who put it out? You know, they look at it in a different way now.
Mm. Yeah,
the music, money. It's about money's behind it, of course. It's who sells and who doesn't, and traditionalists aren't selling now, so therefore they don't use them enough. But I got so many comments about the Stella Awards and how it did not represent us.
Mm.
And I was pleased to hear it. You see where I said it? Pleased to hear somebody that recognized the same thing. And I don't mean just anybody. The body said, where was the gospel?
It was really obvious to me. And again, I got nothing but love for the team who puts it together, but it should be a more balanced presentation. That's to me is not reflective of the state of gospel music. It's just not.
Yeah.
And I've worked at several labels and worked with everyone from Shirley Caesar, one of my favorites, who I want to talk to you about here in a few, but Jonathan McReynolds, you know, wide range. You know, I've worked with a wide range, but it was always important to me to make sure that I work with the Ricky Dillards, the Donald Lawrence, the Hezekiah Walkers, Kirk Franklin, everybody, because everybody wants something different and can be inspired in different ways. So you can't just have a roster or a presentation show-wise with just one type of sound.
They've made traditional gospel almost into a dirty little secret, which I don't like, because I agree with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same thing for how it's used and co-opted just in music in general. Mm. Like, everyone knows gospel music, and everyone's sampling it, and everyone will hire the choir for
the background
for that one SNL performance or that one American Music Awards Grammy thing, and so if you know it, you're like, oh yeah, that's Ricky Dillard right there, or that's Donald Lawrence right there. That I know that, but they're not even as an art form that's maybe older than other ones. It should still be held up the way we hold up classical music, if that's the case, or jazz, if that's the case.
Yes,
and having to your point, have it's time to shine for what it really is.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I miss
with
it
you.
Too.
Well, you know, the country people, I mean, Roy Acuff and all those guys in those days, was, you know, they kept the sound, and now they still maintain that sound, even though they're contemporary country music people. They're doing the same thing that the gospel people are doing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound country some of those people. You know? Sounds like pop music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same thing that we're doing with gospel, including on stage, was the dances that they had, the type of dancing that they did to the music that was going on at the Stella Awards.
Yeah.
It was more like a secular situation, you know. Mm. There was no holiness in it. There was no praise in it. It was just movements.
Mm.
It's
that part. It's the holiness in it
for me. And I'm going to go ahead and go on record and say that I didn't like, and you're not saying this, Dr. Jones, but I'm saying it. For those that don't know, Dr. Jones has like awards at BET Awards. That he has his own category for inspirational gospel music, but also the Stella Awards, he has a special honor that he awards each year, a special honoree. And this year, I believe, was Candy Staten, right?
It was.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, should have been in the main telecast.
On the telecast.
No, it was not. It was in the pre-show. And to me, that's, how do you, one, it's Dr. Jones, but
disrespectful.
Two, and then Candy Staten, who's also a legend in her own right, like, it's just, to me, those type of, that's a misstep, because that's a way in that you could balance the show better, in my opinion.
Maybe I shouldn't say anything, because my name was in it, but it was insulting.
Mm.
Canon should say something, it should be you.
Well, you know, I don't want it to appear to be something that I'm really not. But I thought for Candy Staten, especially, you know, to bring her in and give her an award, and then don't even air it.
Yeah,
right.
In the category, and to me, I told him, I said, "How are you gonna leave me out? What's up with you?
What's up with you?
It has to be a personal situation here, because anybody with any knowledge of the industry of gospel music would be inclusive here.
Right.
You know, but I said that behind closed doors. Now I said it publicly.
but you don't get change unless you say where you see things can be better.
Yeah.
I wanted to see Shirley Caesar on the show this year. That's my friend, you know, Shirley.
Have been something?
Yeah.
It's like this brother Mike, was that his name?
Yeah. Pastor Mike.
Yeah. So he got relatively traditional in his delivery, speaking, you know, and the audience just went crazy over it, you know. But then that, you know.
That was it.
The everything else covered it up.
So who do you love right now? Are there new gospel artists or gospel artists out today that excite you, that you feel are special?
Yeah, a lot of them. Leonard girl,
Tasha Cobb Leonard.
Oh my God. Yeah. Leandria.
Yeah.
Just so many of them.
This guy produced all Leandria stuff.
Oh, did he?
Jesus.
Yeah. She's a man.
She's a powerhouse.
Yes, she is.
She's one of the best I've ever worked with.
Period.
And she's natural. Just, you know, the name. Yeah.
That's why it's good. It doesn't feel contrived. It feels like she's singing from pain and worship and overcoming. And that's what's missing.
Yeah.
We sound crazy!
Dr. Jones, if you had to pick your Mount Rushmore of gospel artists, what would that look like? Mount Rushmore is four people for everybody listening.
if you don't know Mount Rushmore.
But who would be on Dr. Bobby Jones' Mount Rushmore of gospel music?
That's a good question.
I have Donna Lawrence writing for me. I may have some scars.
I am here.
But I'm here.
Circumstances.
Still got some circumstances.
I'm still here.
But I'm still here. Donna Lawrence is one of the greatest, I think.
I love Donna. I love that you said him first, too.
Yeah.
I love that.
I do. And Hezekiah Walker would bring the energy.
Every praise is to our God.
And Ricky Dillard would also present that entertainment part of it. See, I'm bringing all the parts together, you know.
Yeah.
Donna Lawrence, writer, you know, okay. And going down the line for vocals, there's Tasha Cobb, that I mentioned before. She's one of the leading characters in it for me.
There is power in the name of Jesus.
Then I'd go back and get Shirley Caesar to season it.
To season it! Beans, greens, potato, hams, ham. Gotta season it with Pastor Caesar.
Hold my mute.
Yeah, in fact, excuse me to answer that, but I'm gonna back up a second and tell you what happened to her. On last year, she was to get my award, and he was not gonna put it on either. And so she had to go speak to him. To Don Jackson, then tell him how she was disappointed she was, and she said it so heartily that he put her on, but he didn't put me on to do it, so to present it, and it was my award, and so she said, and then he said, would you walk Shirley Caesar to the stage in her award? I said no. Who do you think I am? I'm not going to do that. Right. And Shirley said, please do it for me. And I said, okay, I will. Okay. So I walked out with her, and it was one of the exciting parts of the show, really, when I said, yeah, Shirley, we appreciate you, and we like that song you did, Potatoes and Corn. she said, let me do it. Did you remember that?
Yeah.
That went viral.
So putting that together, I would also include some quartet singers. And there's a little guy named Tim Rogers that's kind of a secret to it. He has a style and a way of making presentations that's so obvious. Mm. And Melvin Williams and Doug Williams from the Williams Brothers.
The Williams Brothers, man.
Yeah. So it would be inclusive. And then I'd like to put like a little taste of Jonathan McReynolds.
You like Jonathan?
Yeah, I love Jonathan.
He's great.
Yeah.
The way that you love me, the way that you love me, is everything I need. Don't never let me go.
And I mentioned Hezekiah, didn't
you? Yep.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, so he's
so well balanced. I mean, it's technically three Mount Rushmores, Dr. Jones, you just gave me. Okay. But I ain't going to, you know.
He can extend his Mount Rushmore.
He can extend it. It's a Gospel Music Heritage Month. So.
Wait, hold on. I don't know why I'm curious, but Chuck, what would be your gospel Mount Rushmore?
Yeah.
Top four of all time.
Kirk Franklin.
You do.
I smile.
Mighty Clouds of Joy.
But just walk around all day.
Willie Neil Johnson and the Gospel Keynote.
I'm yours. Try me, Jesus.
old enough to remember him.
That's my father left all his records when he left the house, and that's what was there. It was all gospel records. So Mighty Clouds and Willie Neil Johnson. And I'm going to give it to my girl, Leandria.
Okay.
Wow, that's your Mount Rushmore.
One of the best of all time.
Wow. Okay, let me see if I can do this. Kirk Franklin, the Clark sisters.
Ooh. You brought the sunshine. You brought the sunshine in my life.
You are the lifeline. The Hawkins family. Oh, I might have to give it to the Winans.
Oh, yeah,
the Winans. She'll be all over in the morning. Yeah, and when I say Winans, it's an all-inclusive Winans. I'm talking about everyone who goes under the name. BBCCU, the Winans.
That's Dr. Jones' favorite. Look at his face. His favorite people, the Winans, right there.
Uh-oh. Did I strike a nerve? Did I hit a nerve?
No.
Okay, good.
Phil, what's your Mount Rushmore, bro?
Mount Rushmore, it's tough. It depends on the day, but I guess today I go with Kirk Franklin. I go with the Clark sisters. I would also Donald Lawrence, and this one might throw you off, but I hope you all understand. Aretha.
No, I understand.
Aretha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand.
Oh, yeah, by all means.
I understand completely.
Mm-hmm. I would have included Kirk as well.
Mm-hmm. We sound crazy.
I feel like we can't go any further without talking about, like, the legendary, groundbreaking, record-setting...
Bobby Jones Gospel.
Yes, the TV show, man.
But Claude, before we go into it, I just got to acknowledge that the network BET launched on January 25th, 1980, the same year I was born. Okay. But also 2 days later, this series, Bobby Jones Gospel, launched on the network. So literally, this show was flagship series.
Of Black Entertainment Television.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think many people realize that.
That is insane.
It was Bob Johnson and I that started the network, actually. And mine was the first show, and he had, you know, we communicated about it. I didn't even know about cable because it wasn't that widespread at the time. And they took the copy of the show. I was doing a show here in Nashville called the Nashville Gospel. Mm. And I had, you know, just regular people from Nashville on the show. And they took that show to New Orleans, where Bob Johnson was there looking for some Black presentations of any sort. Mm. And there were none there other than my show. and he called and said, Dr. Jones, I saw your show, and I would like to put it on my network. I said, oh, yeah? What kind of network is it? W5 or something like that. And I said, oh, sure, anything to get out of Nashville, you know.
Wow.
So he did, and that started. No other. It was just my show. And they had a soccer team of some sort that he would play. We came on like 2 or 3 in the morning for this satellite show. And so that's how it got started. And the revenue that came in during the whole process of launching it over and over again came from Bobby Jones Gospel. That's what they had to sell.
Unbelievable.
And before he even started, they started producing their own shows, you know, when they got their studio there. And then he started the hip-hop movement, I guess you know that. Mm-hmm. So that's how
that makes it double legendary. Because, I mean, you're talking about what launched BET.
Yeah.
And, I mean, many shows came and went in between... Mm-hmm. The beginning of BET and the how many years was the run?
35
years of genuine content that really always felt like it was your hour. It was your time. For you, I'm speaking to you about you, mm-hmm. to really showcase what you wanted the world to see. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel orchestrated or like that's why I was allowed to watch it. My mom was like, "Okay, you can watch Dr. Bobby Jones' Gospel, but then turn it off and let's go to church." But
that's real.
It was at a time when, especially apart from even what's happening on the secular side, that's how we learned the bar. of what was great, what things sounded like, what it looked like, how to perform when you went to your church for rehearsal. Like, you were watching that to see what Kirk was doing, what this choir was doing, what new songs were coming out, what information they were giving during your interviews that you would always have after the performance. Like, all that stuff was key information for us. Like, we were learning and growing from that. Like, we built our musical encyclopedias and careers off of that knowledge from watching that show every Sunday.
You know, that's amazing to hear you say that, and because we didn't realize what was going on with that. And now that I retired from BET, from the top of the line people in the business tell that same story.
It's the truth.
That you tell. And it just, we didn't realize that. I was the producer and the host. I invited all the guests in and the kind of music that we would use. And
it felt that way.
Did it?
Yeah, it did.
Yes.
It really did.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
it felt like someone cared about what they were presenting to you. So
I wanted it to be real. You know, and sometimes when you do television shows and things like that, you fashion it.
Right.
And I didn't want it fashioned. I wanted the people to be able to express themselves like we do. Mm-hmm. And when we hear gospel music, that they want to shout, they want to dance or whatever it is, because I'm Methodist and we didn't do that.
So wait, you didn't
I was about to ask you, what about growing up in the it was United Methodist, right?
CME.
CME. Mm-hmm. What about growing up in CME prepared you for the
nothing?
Nothing.
Not one thing.
No, because we were emulating white people. Most of us, the blacks in America, white people were our role models. Mm. You know, they taught us how to, you know, what they considered the proper way to eat, to do sin. And this is what we patterned after, you know. Mm-hmm. And we even wanted our hair to be like them. We wanted everything. We wanted our skin to be white. We used things to make your skin lighter. Mm-hmm. You know, those things that came, you know, came down like that. So I wasn't prepared from the Methodist church because we were trying to sing hymns. Nobody could read a note, the piano player. but we would be, we were trying to sing the hymns.
I grew up Episcopal. It's the same thing.
The same thing.
Hype organs and choirs.
And I came to Nashville and I went to this Baptist church. This woman wanted somebody to come play with the Sunday school. My aunt had a piano in her house. I stayed with them, and she played by ear. And I thought that, oh, the sound, that is wonderful. So I sat on the piano and taught myself how to play the piano. And this woman announced on the radio station that she wanted to have someone to come to play for their Sunday school session. And I told my aunt, I said, I'm going to go do it. And so I went to the church and I played with three fingers and one main one on the lower end. Mm-hmm. And I played Jesus Keep Me Near the Cross and Pass Me Not, O Gentle Savior. That's all I knew in keys of F and C. That's that's how it had to have been something that God wanted me to do.
Right.
And so I kept on trying, you know, to play different songs and sing with the choir. And the choir became one of the best choirs in Nashville. And I couldn't believe all this was happening. Nobody in Paris, that's where I'm from, Paris, Tennessee.
Paris, Tennessee.
Yeah, Henry in Paris. And they couldn't believe what was happening.
Wow.
You know, and that's how that came about.
Wow.
So the contributions that I made from CME as far as gospel is concerned was not there.
That's funny.
We sound crazy.
In the early 90s, while you were taping Bobby Jones' gospel, Vicky Maglatiad, founder of Gospel Centric Records, approached you backstage about this new young artist she was excited about. Mm-hmm. But the crazy thing is, y'all, the show was apparently already booked, overbooked. Mm-hmm. There was no space on the show.
Right.
That artist who Dr. Jones made space for was Kirk Franklin.
What?
On all of our Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See?
Do you remember that day when Vicky approached you? Like, I got this artist out of Dallas. Like, what do you remember about that time?
Just like it was yesterday.
Wow. Mm.
Because of the impact that happened after that.
Wow.
You know, I finally said yes, of course, that we'll put him on. And so when he came on and they started, he did a slow song first, and then he came out and said, "Jesus, go Jesus, go Jesus, go, go Jesus." And the audience was like, and they all stood up and they started. And I looked at Al Hobbs, that was one of my assistants at the time, and Meredith. I said, "Did you see that boy? What he's doing?" And they went absolutely crazy. And then the next thing I knew, Vicky was putting together The Reason Why We Sing. And I said, he's on mainstream radio. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? And Vicky said, you gave him a chance to do this. And I saw him performing. I saw the audience responding to him. And I decided that we could make this crossover thing. And that's how Kirk Franklin came about.
Hello?
And the nice thing about Kirk is he tells the story.
He does.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A lot of people, they're shy about wanting to tell things, you know.
That's, yeah. I did tell Kirk next time he wants to bring you out to his festival to make sure you first class, though. I did tell him that. I did tell him to do that. Make sure Dr. Jones in the first class cabin. Just
anybody, you know, Dr. Jones Kirk, was told, flying coach. I don't like that.
I'm just saying. I want to just make sure. It should be private planes. Just make sure, you know, it's first class accommodations across
please,
the board.
Please.
So shout out to Kirk Franklin. He's a friend to the podcast.
That's an amazing story because... Though you don't get those true origin stories very often.
You don't. Mm-hmm.
You don't.
But you don't. It was a lot of those artists that came through BET and our gospel show that people didn't know about. Or if they heard their music, they didn't know what they looked like.
Right. For me, I didn't know what they looked like until I watched the show.
Right.
Or how they moved. A lot of it was everything. It was fashion. It was everything. Because we took all that and then inserted it into our individual churches where we were living. Because I was in charge of choirs and stuff. I'm like, well, look, I just saw this on Bobby Jones, and Kirk was doing this, so we gotta come hard because we gotta turn up. So it really was influencing culture.
Mm. And I chose some singers from Nashville that were really, really great singers. I wanted it to be a certain way. I just had that in me. This is the way I wanted to look. And this is the way, because when I'd go to some concerts, some of the things that they did, I didn't like. I thought it would be insulting to other people. So I didn't want that kind of presentation. So I chose this heavyset girl. Because a lot of gospel singers are heavyset. Mm. And I wanted them to feel good about themselves. So she was meticulously dressed, you know, makeup and all of that, and could sing.
Mm. Oh, so you had a vision.
Yeah.
For how you wanted to even look like that and the representation. Yeah. I didn't realize it was that.
Yeah, in the presentation of the music, because I knew that it needed to be spiritual as well as culturally. Because the other churches, like my Methodist folk, they didn't like gospel music. Mm. In fact, when I was coming through this business, they wouldn't allow us to have nobody to bring drums or anything but an organ and a piano. Mm-hmm. That was the only kind of music you could make in those churches. I think the Pentecostals may have had tamarines, but no drums or none of that was allowed. It was way on up into the 80s. People don't even know that.
No.
You couldn't bring those instruments in the church. They said it was the devil's music.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Crazy.
Yeah. And don't mention the Pentecostals. You know, the other churches outside of the, I don't know the history and all of Pentecostals because they have different kinds, you know. They didn't know that this was a part of their worship service. We used to make fun of them. They had a little Pentecostal church in my little town of about 400 people, and we'd go there to make fun. Because they would dance and fall out, you know, and sit out and sweat and all, you know, and we would go home laughing, and you see that, you know, and didn't know that this was a real thing for them. It was interesting how it grew, but then when I got the show, I said, it's got to be real. Mm. It's got, you know, you got to see the real deal. And that's what I wanted to do. And so I brought in different quartets. Of course, quartet and gospel is two different styles, you know, of course. And then I wanted to bring another sound of a hymn in. Then I wanted to bring the spiritual in and then present them as a climb in how a musical, spiritually speaking, should be presented to the people to let them know, yeah, there are spirituals which happened first. The slaves started that. And a lot of people who talk about this music, they don't understand what they're saying. The slaves sang gospel, they didn't. you know, you had to look at the progression of what happened during that period.
Right.
And then, of course, after Thomas Dorsey brought that blues sound into the church, oh, man, did they go off on him and the people who were singing it. And it took a while for them to get them to allow them to sing with just the piano and those voices that Thomas Dorsey put together. And then it started in Chicago, Illinois, at this Baptist church. And then it moved to Detroit, from Detroit to Philadelphia to New York, and then back over to Newark, New Jersey. There was a trail of how this music was presented, the gospel music. Sally Martin, who was a good friend of mine, an older lady, and Willie Mae Ford Smith. Mm-hmm. Willie Mae Ford Smith was out of St. Louis, Missouri, and Sally was out of Chicago. They took the sheet music from the music that Darcy would write and sell that sheet music for 10 cents a copy to the people who had the choirs around the country. And so that's how that music got spread, you know, through that. And then eventually, then the Pentecostals, you know, they like to dance anyway. So, and they do a whole lot of other things. They speak a language that we don't know. So then they caught on to the swing of the Dorsey elements, and they started using that music. So then it just began to spread and spread. But it wasn't until about 15 years that I did Bobby Jones Gospel that the urban markets didn't have it. And people didn't know that was out there.
Wow.
And we had been doing it on just markets like Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And when it hit Chicago, when Bob Johnson and them finally got it into the urban, because it took a while.
Mm-hmm.
15 years I'm doing this show and people didn't even know it unless they lived in Florida or Texas. Those were the two biggest states that carried cable TV.
Mm.
And so then they were able to witness the blacks then when, you know.
Yeah, they found
they
it
got
first.
Some black folk on that city because there were no blacks. Affirmative action was the reason that I was able to get that show on Nashville on an NBC affiliate station.
Hmm.
They had to
diversify.
Yeah, diversify. And so we came at the right time.
Right.
To say, yes, you can have a half hour show. So we did it. And it became number one at that time in Nashville. It became number one. And some other stuff I'll tell you about it later that happened between the black people and their lack of support or whatever in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That happens too, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does. So after it hit Chicago and Bob Johnson and them, they started making that money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kept it going. That show brought in the revenue to create Adonis Simpson and all the rest of those people who had shows.
Hello.
And we were paid. I had to find places in Nashville where we could record the show. So they let me have it at Channel 4 for a little while as NBC affiliate. Then we had to leave there. Then we went to Channel 2, we went to Channel 5, and then into Channel 8, which is a public service television. And we had to pay for that ourselves.
What?
Yeah. The money that Bob Johnson gave us wouldn't have paid for one show.
Wow.
And we did all of that. And the singers were for free.
That whole time?
Yeah, whole time. Never got a dime. And people thought that we were rich.
Wait, I'm shocked by this.
That's crazy. Well, Dr. Jones, I do want to tell you that Bob Johnson can pay you back now.
He sure can.
Pay you back. He got a little change in the account. So
Reparations.
Billionaire.
And
that is unbelievable.
Never really did. And how they after Viacom bought BET.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let me produce the shows anymore. They wanted in-house producers to do the show. It was fine with me. But they still didn't give any money. He wanted me to have six singers, and they were going to allot a certain amount of money for those six singers and a little band.
Mm.
And so I said, no, sir. I said, I don't use just the six singers now. I use a choir.
Right.
Yeah. And they said, well, no, we can't do that. I said, well, we got to work something out. He said, okay, the money that I give you for those six singers, you can have it, and that we'll give it for the choir. He said, and we'll bring them, we'll fly them in, and we'll feed them and put them in a hotel. From that day to the day we left, that's how it worked.
That's crazy.
Y'all can't tell this. The people just didn't know. I spent so much of the little money that I made with McGraw-Hill and other situations to support. And I'm doing the same thing now.
Mm. That's insane.
And so after the, you know, a friend of mine said, Dr. Jones, have you thought about your exit strategy? I said, no, I'll do it as long as I have me, you know. And I thought about it. I said, well, maybe I should think about that. And I did. And I said, I'll go 35 years. And I told them, and then they started, the BET2 started crying, oh, you don't leave us. You know, they want to lose that money. But That's how that happened. So here comes another network. This black guy in Detroit, Michigan, has the only black satellite network in America.
Impact.
Mm-hmm. TV. Ah. So I switched and went to Impact.
Okay.
Well, I went to Word first, the Word Network, and then to Impact because of a guy named...
Jackson.
How could I ever not think call his name right now? But he was the one that was working with Word Network.
Okay.
And he brought me in. He wanted to do it all the time. He would have been following behind me. I didn't know what he wanted. And so that's how that happened. And then he left Word and went to Impact, and that's what we're doing now. And the only reason I'm doing these shows now is to keep some gospel music on television.
Okay.
I thought during the period that I was doing gospel music that there would be people like Walter Hawkins and Andre Crouch and all of them that were real known people. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to come on and I was going to say, oh God, I'm going to lose my show. It's these people coming to it. But they never did. Yeah. Not one.
Mm.
And so I knew that it was spiritually led.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can give it to.
Crazy!
The last season of the show, I had my mom and one of my aunts come up to D.C. to witness the last season on BET of Bobby Jones Gospel. And it was amazing. It was incredible to see just everyone, artists, label executives, songwriters, everyone come out to celebrate.
Mm.
And at the conclusion of the weekend of the last taping, there was an amazing dinner, good food. Everyone's in there. Kirk is in there. Isaac Carey's in there. And, of course, Dr. Jones was at the center. Vicky Winans was there. And Donnie McClurkin was in the building.
Oh, Lord.
And there was a moment that I wish I could have got some video footage. But Stephen Hill made us all turn off our phones.
Yeah.
Because Donnie McClurkin decided to take the podium.
Not asked.
Yeah.
He took it.
Literally took the podium and went on to tell how he never liked Dr. Jones.
Wait, what?
For years.
Oh, yeah.
At his celebration.
At his celebration.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Tell the rest of it.
Yeah.
Please do.
So we're all like, oh, my God. Like, he's, you know, shout out to Donnie McClurkin, but he literally sat there and talked about he had this issue with Dr. Jones. And the thing was, it was nothing that Dr. Jones had done. It was just this issue that being Donnie McClurkin, manufactured. And he sat in front of the room and told this story. And we were all like, oh, my God. So I was like, man.
Was he drunk?
No, he was sober. Mm. He was sober. But that was part of the good part. The highlight for us all was when Dr. Bobby Jones took the stage to accept and celebrate everyone and to celebrate a momentous 35 years. And he personally acknowledged everyone who spoke before him, Vicky Winans and Kirk Franklin. Do you remember what you said to Donnie McClurkin? Because I was in stitches. It was.
Well, I'm sorry that you didn't like me, but I didn't know you.
I don't know you.
I don't know you.
Who were you?
Right.
So you're mad at nothing because I don't even know who you are.
Yeah, I had no idea who he was and didn't
That's
care.
That's crazy.
And didn't care. He said it didn't care.
But he did come to me and tell me that I didn't like you. I said, well, what? What was up? I don't know. I just didn't like you. I said, well, I think you just wanted the TV show yourself, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he never did tell me. But anyway,
that's so disrespectful.
It was so funny, but just his clapback. I said, Dr. Jones' clapback game. It was like he was getting more bars. Like he literally went down each row and just talked. It was amazing. But that was a funny.
It was funny. Then he apologized.
I would hope so.
Yeah, he did. And he said, I would never do your show. I said, well, good. we had plenty to do. He was messing with the wrong person. He probably read me wrong. You know how people look at you.
Of course, they know you. Of course,
you know.
Your show was certainly not hurting.
Well, that's
we'll put it like that.
Yeah, but that's a little history of how it came from Nashville and into D.C. to Bob Johnson.
And on and on.
And the interesting thing about it was, now this is the serious part.
Mm.
After I decided that I was going to do this, and the last show I was. When we did the rehearsal, and they had formed some cloud, things like a cloud, and I was supposed to walk up these steps and go out with the cloud, like I'm going out of the cloud. Mm-hmm. That in the rehearsal part, it affected me. Mm-hmm. But during the show part, I guess because I had done it, mm-hmm. it didn't affect me as much until I walked down that last step in the back of the stage. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, my God. And I looked out at the audience, and Isaac Carey was just bent over the mm-hmm. stage crying. I looked at the camera. It's so hard for me to tell it. I looked at the camera people, and they were crying, and everything was kind of, you know, yeah, it was interesting. And the producers of the show, there was two women. They wanted me not to help produce my own show. Mm. And so they did some things that I didn't like, but we didn't fall out, but they were really kind of glad that I was going to leave because mm. somebody was going to take over the next show. But after that, a year afterwards, after I suggested that Ty Tribbett be the host. Mm. They had three people they brought to me that they said, which one of these? They were Kirk Franklin, Isaac Carey, and Ty Tribbett. Mm-hmm. And I suggested Ty because he had come into one of our shows and he set up a scene that he wanted to. I thought it was just magic how he did that. Mm. And so I thought, okay, use Ty Tribbett. After Ty Tribbett did about three or four shows, they had the lowest ratings that they had of any show.
In the history of the network. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Really?
In the history of the network?
Mm-hmm. Literally one of the lowest rated shows. My mom's still mad. Like, she was like, she can't listen to nothing Ty Tribbett to this day. And I love Ty. I mean, but my mom's like, man, who's this guy? And he on Sunday morning, that ain't Bobby Jones. I didn't, you know, I'm like, man, Dr. Jones endorsed him. She like, man, nah. And it's on Sit Right.
So, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but it was literally one of the lowest rated shows in the network's history.
Mm-hmm. And so then they took it off.
Yeah.
You know, period.
Okay.
And so, but after a year, and I'm talking about Ty was gone after six shows or so. He was gone. Mm. Every one of those people that were in charge of BET got fired. From the CEO, they didn't say she got fired, but she did. Mm. They weren't going to Stephen Hill, mastermind. Mm. He was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Let him go. And all of the other staff people that were working on our show, every single one was let go from BET. So what did that say to me? That said, thank you, Jesus, for letting me get out of there.
Mm. Gracefully and respectfully the way you deserve to.
But you got love for BET. I mean, I saw you at the BET Awards this year, so I know you're still on good terms with BET.
Yeah. And love BET. I have to. Look what they did for me.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I'm all over the world. Mm. You know, they still follow me on Impact.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Japan. I can't go through all the countries that we went to.
Worldwide.
You know, and how can had it not been for BET?
Right. Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened to me. I can't be a fool.
Right.
You know, and that's what a fool would do to not appreciate, you know, because you didn't make this and make that. But I did make.
Yeah.
It just didn't come from them. Mm-hmm. But they gave me the avenue to do the things that I needed to do. I hope somebody who's listening to this now will understand, if you don't follow your mind and follow your spiritual acknowledgments and things, sometimes you'll miss it. Mm. Because I've had, you know, people didn't like certain groups that would come on the show. I didn't like them. I didn't do that. Well, Kirk can't sing. Mm. And he's the leader of the whole industry.
Mm. Yeah.
And then don't even try. Sometimes he'll try to do a few little things, but it doesn't necessarily take that. And only one person has tried to follow him, and then he did well too, James Fortune. Mm. You know, he talks. He doesn't sing.
Yeah, he talks.
You know. So.
Spoken word.
Yeah.
We sound crazy.
Surprise!
Rejoice with me. That's Dr. Bobby Jones.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, with featuring Faith Evans.
Faith Evans. Yeah,
we love Faith.
Yeah, I do too.
Faith can sing.
You know what, Dr. Jones, I really want to commend you because from the beginning of your recording career, because we talk so often about you as a television host, a producer, mm-hmm. you've done Broadway as well, producing wise, but as a recording artist, you were a trailblazer. because the music you recorded, and I'm going back to like early 80s at this point, mm-hmm. like it was more contemporary Christian music, mm-hmm. which I know you faced some criticism at that point.
I did.
And you connected with this amazing artist who was actually a fan of your show in the early 80s, Barbara Mandrell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about, I mean.
I love Barbara Mandrell.
Barbara Mandrell, because Dr. Jones won his first Grammy and her first Grammy, her first That's and her, only okay. Grammy.
And the only Grammy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, 84.
Yes, it was, 84. Yeah. We were recording in a studio, in Nashville, a studio in Nashville, and Barbara Mandrell was recording in the same studio, mm-hmm. and we met up in the hallway, and she was just surprised that we were there, and she said, oh, man, I love you. And then I knew that she had worked with Andre Crouch.
Okay.
And I knew she liked gospel music.
Okay.
So we thought that it would be good that I asked her, would she sing a song with us?
Why not, right?
And, yeah, she was eager, mm. you know, to do it. So, and from that point, she called, her father called me after a while and said that Barbara's was open in Las Vegas at one of the casinos there, and would we sing with her? Mm-hmm. And so at that time, I had just six singers, I think, six or seven, whatever. And we said yes. And we become the star of her show.
That's crazy.
And you know the song we did? We did background with her, but we were backstage on the background part. Then she introduced us as a group. For 8 years, we were at Bailey's.
Dr. Bobby Jones was in Vegas.
Yes.
Yeah. Marquee.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Crazy.
Bobby Jones and New Life, right under Barbara Mandrell's name.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah.
Keep going. This is too good. It's too good.
And so the song that we sang was Call Him Up, Tell Him What You Want.
Oh, okay.
And the white audience, I mean, they gagged. Here's this white woman and this black man, these black women, and some big ones at that.
We sound crazy.
This is history. This is, we have to talk about these things and let people know real time. We have to celebrate and inform and educate. And this is super important. But Barbara Mandrell, like, that's so legendary.
Dr. Bobby Jones in Vegas is still blowing my mind.
It's crazy.
It's blowing my mind. I love
this. 8 years.
Eight years in Vegas. Come on. I love that.
But the Saints weren't ready for that. You know what I mean? Like, the Saints were not. You know, so you won your first Grammy with Come Together with Barbara Mandrell, and the gospel community, because of the performances in Vegas, mm-hmm. and just felt like, oh, that's not, you know, holy. And then, you know, is this musically not gospel? Which is so interesting to me that people feel like they can, qualify or quantify or describe what gospel should be. And because in that category that year, it was I think the Clark Sisters were in the category, the Winans.
The Winans.
Yeah. You know, because Marvin wasn't happy.
Okay, so
he was not happy.
So what we're saying is, well, there's backlash.
Why wasn't Marvin happy?
Because he lost. Lost to Dr. Jones and Barbara Mandrell, and he was one of the people who I, in my research, advocated to actually try to get the song removed when it was on the nominee ballot, mm-hmm. allegedly. Mm-hmm. But also post Dr. Jones' win, he also advocated to try to get the Grammy taken back.
Wait, what?
Allegedly.
Oh yeah.
All of that,
yeah.
All of that campaign
loss,
yeah. It was not nice.
That's crazy,
dang.
Yeah, after
where's the love, brother?
Where's the love?
And the wine has never appeared on Bobby Jones' gospel. I mean, it will be in CC, but not the brothers.
Yeah, not the brothers.
Wow.
What?
And Marvin finally came. It was at my last season.
Yeah,
he came and we talked about it.
Mm.
But they treated us. After we won the Grammy, just one other guy that was with me when we got it, and we went to the restaurant where everybody was, and they didn't respond to us, and we knew what was going on, but you know, yeah, that happened.
That
wow,
it's so many stories.
It's bonkers.
It's crazy. Can you imagine? Like, it just, that's the unfortunate part about, you would think in the gospel community that it would just be a celebration for whomever.
Unity. Brings, right?
Yeah, unity.
Yeah.
We're all for the same cause and same purpose. So that's disappointing to hear. Mm-hmm. That's so disappointing.
But I didn't respond to it. I did that situation like I did with Donnie McClurkin, you know.
Crazy! We're going to acknowledge a good Winans in this one. Priscilla, CC Winans.
You know I love CC.
That's how you met Whitney.
Yes. Yes. How'd you know that?
Here at We Sound Crazy, the homework gets done.
Yeah. We do our research. Here, Dr. Yeah. Jones. So, yeah. Whitney Houston, like Sissy's daughter.
Yeah.
What do you remember? I know Sissy was the one who made the introduction, but
yeah. But see, I knew Sissy, Whitney's mother, long before I met her, and because she came and did my show. You know, Patti LaBelle and all those people.
Everybody.
He came to do Bobby Jones Gospel. We could get over it, you know. And Cece and BB did not have a reaction to me about the Grammy situation. So we were still friends. Mm. They took it as they should have. And that settled out. And their mother loved me.
Dolores, yeah. Mr. Dolores.
Yeah, and hey. I love her. Yeah. So that's how that smoothed itself out.
Wow.
So one time in D.C., I was at the White House about five times with the Republicans.
Listen, you're at the White House, period.
Yeah. And so BB was there, you know, and Marvin was there. For something, I don't know what it was. Anyway, I had a seat kind of like down front because the president and I were good friends, believe it or not, because of the TV show.
This is George Bush? Which president? Which president?
The second one.
George W.
Bush. Oh, George,
yeah,
okay, got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, because he'd come, when you meet them, I'm like, hey, Barbara, we watched your show last night. I said, no, Mr. President, no, you didn't. Laura, tell me that they didn't watch the show. That's a lot of fun. So I had a seat up front, and some people were not there at that time. So I invited Marvin to come up and sit there.
Oh,
and,
man.
You know, and let's talk. And I said, how's your mom? You know, I'm old enough to be your father. You know?
Just a reminder. Yeah. Show some respect.
And he respected that, so.
That's a nice olive branch.
That's the way you have to do it.
And also a nice flex. Like, I was able to invite him up to the front seat at the White House event I was at.
Yeah.
I like it. It's very subtle.
You were honored by the White House, right?
Yes.
What kind of honor was that?
I have to look at my proclamation and tell you what it was. But it was for television and gospel music.
Man, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. We were there five or six times.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy! I got to ask, and this is a question I always wanted to know, because you've had so many artists on the show, not only in gospel, but people who were influenced and are just gospel, i.e. Patti and just so many. Was there any guest that you wish you could have had on the show, but you were not able to secure, whether it was just scheduling or whatever reason? Like,
it's
is
a great question.
Yeah. Anyone?
And on her way, they turned around and went back.
Mm.
And she was a great friend of mine. I did all of her revivals that she would have in Detroit, Michigan.
You're talking about Miss Aretha.
Aretha Franklin.
Aretha Franklin never did the show?
Never did the show. She was on her way at one time. Because we were friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. She said, oh, Bobby, I'm coming. But she never did the show. But that's the only one. I mean,
is
that's
there
the
a reason,
main one.
Is there a reason why? Is it timing?
I don't know. We never discussed it.
But how legendary is it that you friends with Aretha?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, that's... And because in your book, you talk about, you know, going to Detroit and being part of her events. And I mean, Aretha would let Dr. Bobby Jones close.
Yeah.
Him and the choir would close.
Yes. Yeah.
She would literally perform before him, go change clothes, tell everybody to stay.
Yeah.
Right?
How did you know that?
But it's in your book. It's in your book.
Oh,
it's
man.
In your, I'm just
oh.
reading.
You've been standing
Back. Oh,
y'all, yeah. y'all can read this to Make a Joyful Noise, 25 years in gospel. It's available now. You can Kindle it. You can get it on Amazon. But in the book, you talk about Aretha and just the friendship and the bond and just, but the fact that Aretha Franklin, the queen that we all know, was like, nah, you know what? Y'all close. Dr. Bobby Jones, y'all close. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go sing before y'all. I'm going to go change clothes and sit down and enjoy like,
this.
Uh-huh. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's exactly what she did.
Mm.
And we looked at each other. It scared us to death. We thought all the people would be leaving and whatever, you know. But no, They did not. They stayed. And
because they knew. They knew. Well, if Aretha says stay because I got something for you, then she.
I talked about her after it was over to her. You know, we were friends.
Yeah.
But she just fell out laughing. I said, you know, I can't tell you what we talked. What I said. I called her a name. Why did you? You know, we're not supposed to sing after you. Why did you do that to me? I had Stephanie Mills there. Stephanie Mills. It was about three or four major artists that were there.
I think Stephanie. Jermaine was there too.
Jermaine. And they were going to sing with us.
Yes.
Mm. Because we thought we had to be that, you know, powerful to come behind Aretha. But she took them, they sang with her. She called them out to sing with her, do it, and took them away from us.
but set you up to close for her.
She just wanted Bobby Jones and New Life. That's who he was. Mm. She just said, wow. You know, and I had them Pentecostal girls, you know.
They went in.
The Pentecostal girls, they died, and her son was the first one to hit the floor. He danced with her, you know. Her name was Nawana Dunlap, and she could play all the instruments and things like that. It ended up with fun, of course, because we were friends, you know. But I let her have it about that. I said, how dare you to do come on before me, and you know you.
One of the people that could let Aretha Franklin have it.
Yeah. Right.
No one can say that sentence. I let Aretha Franklin have it. Besides Dr. Bobby Jones,
We sound crazy.
But Aretha's not the only icon that you interfaced with and had a friendship with. There was a show before Bobby Jones Gospel. I'm going back to the 70s at this point.
Let's do that.
Bobby Jones World. You looking at me like, yeah?
Oh no,
Bobby Jones World. The Jacksons were on this show.
What?
Stevie Wonder was on this show.
Wait.
Where, am I telling the truth, Dr. Jones?
Marilyn McCoo.
Yes,
and Billy McCoo Davis. And,
yeah.
This is a series.
Wait.
This is a show before Bobby Jones Gospel. This one said, like, Dr. Jones has been a television host and producer, I would say, since early 70s, because that first show was Fun City 5.
Yeah.
And just so much history. But just to think that you actually had a show that had the Jacksons and Stevie Wonder, musical icons.
Yeah. And Billy Davis and Marilyn McCool.
We're going to put some respect on their name, too. But just
meeting so many celebrities, have you ever been starstruck?
Ooh, yeah.
Really?
God. With Patti LaBelle, Dionne Warwick. Dionne Warwick took the train from Newark to D.C. to be a part of our show by herself.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. And left part of her clothes in there, and she had to wear one of my singer's shirts. Yeah. And Dionne Warwick, man, you talking about being starstruck?
That's crazy. She's a legend.
Oh, man. And the Whispers, the twins and the Whispers.
Yeah.
They had to sing on our show because their mother said, please. Do see if you can get on Bobby Jones. So the Whispers. So Al Green was one of the first big names. That's when they just came.
You still sound so surprised that they wanted to take time out to do your show.
Yeah, I never got over things like that.
That's awesome, though. Yeah. That excitement is still there.
Oh, it is. It is.
Everyone loved you. I mean, and not only do they love you, but they love you to the point where they wanted to come be a part of it.
Well, I was appreciative.
That's unique and powerful.
Yeah.
In every way.
Yeah. And a lot of other ones, that names that I didn't call, that came to do the show on BET. But we didn't know that show was... We knew we were number one because they come out in the prints, you know. But we didn't know the impact. Neither did we kind of like consider it because it was gospel, and gospel was not looked at like... Because when Bob Johnson then would do the major shows, they wouldn't put us on there. And you know, that it wasn't that interesting. Yeah. And we were his number one show. They never did. He's doing like Don Jackson.
You know. Shout out to Don Jackson and the Stella Awards.
Oh, Lord.
We sound crazy.
Yeah, I got to celebrate one of my favorites, Marvin Gaye. So I played that just because, Dr. Jones, we know you from, like I said, gospel music. We know you from the television shows. You even produced on Broadway. But the other thing people might not know that's in the book.
Here he goes. Oh,
yeah. Dr. Jones can throw a party.
Oh, really?
The Saturday night parties were legendary.
What?
This is all in the book. This is, I'm not telling this business. This is public record. Saturday night parties, turned up. Okay, so Ted Lang, the Love Boat was in there. Bernadette Stannis, who played Thelma on Good Times. I mean, like, it was celebs in there. Like, dignitaries, like, people, government officials. Like, this was a real Saturday night at Dr. Jones' crib.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What?
That's crazy. So what I want to know is when is the movie coming out?
I
need the movie.
Your life would be an amazing, should be, Phil. Hint, hint, hint.
No, I actually said
an amazing movie.
At the screening for Marvin Sapp's biopic, I on the stage, and I'll say it here on the podcast, I said to Dr. Jones, I want to do your biopic. Yeah. Since that time, I've talked to Kirk Franklin about producing it together.
Genius. That's a great idea.
I would love that.
Yeah, that'd be
so
great.
So we're offline, but y'all heard it here first and we sound crazy. But I want to do it with BET. I feel like that's where we need
rightfully
so.
And they better open up the budget too.
Yeah, I'm not worried. I'm not Scott Mills.
Open up the budget.
Scott Mills, Connie Orlando, Rose Catherine Pinkney. Y'all hear me? Okay.
open up that purse.
Let's make that happen.
Coming
man.
Soon. But yeah, but it's a story that needs to be told. But I want to tell it. Talk about them Saturday nights. That's a different Dr. Bobby Jones. You know what I mean? That's like a vibe.
Well, I happened to have I had an apartment, and I had a basement in the apartment. Mm. And so I had a lot of friends, a few friends, whatever.
Just a couple.
I had a lot of friend girls, you know. I like girls that way, that was loose with me. Mm. So it was quite a few of them.
It's all coming out.
Am I telling too much?
No, you're not. This is good.
Anyway, and then the guys always knew that I was going to have these girls in my house, you know. So we would have a party. And they would come, and we would have fun. Mm. And so I was still at church.
That was turn-up time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was. And Oprah happened to be one of my main guests most of the time.
What?
She and her boyfriend. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Hello?
So, so we had fun. And so Oprah enjoyed herself.
I'm mad we missed these parties.
Right. It is legendary.
I want to go back.
I want to go back.
But they were clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were just a good time.
Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah, I wouldn't do anything to embarrass myself or anybody else.
Right,
But we knew how to have a good time together. Yeah. But
I love that.
But the parties abruptly stopped.
Yeah, there was a robbery. Some guys were driving through my neighborhood, and they saw those cars. This was after Black Expo. I was president of Black Expo at the time.
Okay.
And they was... looking to break in something to make some money, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the girls had to leave early, and so she sashayed out of my house and went to her car, and these guys were sitting in the car trying to figure out where the party was. And they asked her, where's the party? And she said, it's back there, it's Bobby Jones. He's back there. My apartment part of the house was in the back. And so they said, So here they come. And all of a sudden, we were in the front of the house. Some of us were. The guy who ran the publishing business here, T.B. Boyd, he was one of my best friends. Right. And so, but at that time, he was dating a girl named Nettie Stowers. So she was one of the black people that worked at Channel 4.
Yeah, that's actually, she had the Sunday morning show,
mm-hmm.
The black community.
Yeah. All that, is that in the book too?
That's in your book.
Oh. So these guys broke into the house and, you know, came in with their guns and told us what to do. You know, get in the floor, give me your jewelry and things like that. And one of them went in the wrong place and the police shot him and killed him.
What?
Yeah, in my house.
Jesus.
Yeah, so it was...
That's traumatizing.
Yeah, it was something else. Bernadette Stannis and... what's the guy from Good Times? They had just left. You know Bernadette Stannis?
Bernadette
Stannis is Thelma out of Good Times.
Absolutely.
What's the guy name with Good Times?
JJ?
No.
The Michael?
Father?
John Stamos?
Who played it? Not John Stamos.
Oh, not the same. Michael Evans, Michael, who played on Good Times.
The father. The father.
John Stamos.
It's Amos.
Yeah. It's John Amos. Amos. That's a John Stamos.
That's who it was. Full
house. My bad, John.
Like Stamos.
What
y'all talking about?
John Stamos. So John Amos.
Yeah.
There we go. Oh, thank you, Claude.
Yeah. I was like, I don't think it's John Stamos.
And my mother would say loud and wrong.
John Amos. Gotcha.
Yeah.
He had just left.
You just left.
They had all just left. So,
wow.
So the party was over.
that was it for the party.
Yeah, that was it for the party, yeah.
That was crazy.
That's a traumatizing story, though, mm-hmm. and this experience.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the Black Expo, though. I was the first president of the Black Expo, and it happened in Nashville. And I was selected that because of the experience I'd had with McGraw-Hill Publishers.
Mm. Okay.
I traveled the world for them, teaching children how to read. Mm. From the phonetic approach instead of the Luxay approach. So I used those experiences I did with the degrees that I had from Vanderbilt and others to be able to do that. So that helped me to become refined, as you call it.
Refined.
Yeah, a lot of black men like to call it something else, but I say refined.
Refined.
You know, give a clean word to it.
Uppity.
Yeah, kind of thing.
As like the bougie.
Yeah.
I have a question. All that stuff, but listen, Everything has become a tool that's made you the legend you are.
Thank you.
So nothing is by accident. I was going to ask you, I think people know you're so synonymous with gospel music that I'm not sure people know. What do you listen to outside of gospel music? Like, well, who's one of your secular favorite artists, if there are?
Yes, quite a few of them. I don't listen to a lot of other music, however, but I've always been a big fan of, Michael Jackson and...
Mm.
Your guy. What's his name? Luther Vandross?
Yeah, Luther Vandross. Dr. Jones acknowledges that I could sound like
Luther.
Thank you.
Al Green. I love Al Green. Yeah. I like the OJs.
Mm.
What did I call the man a few minutes ago?
Maze and Frankie Beverly?
Frankie Beverly and Maze. Yeah. A lot of them, you know.
Great taste.
Great taste.
We sound crazy.
Phil, should we do Keep or Kill?
That's on you. I don't want to do
it. I say we do it.
I just... Oh, jeez.
I say we do
keep
it.
Keep or keep. You know what I mean?
Keep or keep. Keep.
Well, Dr. Jones, we have a segment that we do called...
It's originally...
This or that.
But we call it Keep or Kill. I'm going to clean it up for you on this episode. Where we basically, you have to pick your favorite artist out of the two options we give you.
Which one do you prefer?
Yes.
So you say, we'll give you two options. You pick your favorite, and that's who you're keeping.
Right.
You're not killing nobody. So just be, but we definitely do. So essentially this or that, but we call it Keep or Kill.
Right. Keep or Kill.
The Winans or the Hawkins?
Who are you keeping?
I'm keeping the Hawkins.
Mm. Michael Jackson or Prince?
Oh,
Michael Jackson.
Aretha Franklin or Patti LaBelle?
Oh, God. Aretha Franklin.
Okay.
BET or Impact?
BET.
Okay.
Television. Or making records?
Television.
Mm. Wow. Kirk Franklin or Donald Lawrence?
Oh, God. Both of them.
I wouldn't be able to choose either.
This was good.
That was a good one.
That was a great one.
There was no hesitation at all. He was ready to go.
Yeah, he was ready. He's like, I want all the smoke.
Crazy.
The Esther Roll
Award.
I can feel him moving. I can feel him moving.
All three of y'all jumping
on the altar of my
Who's that?
Festival from Good Times.
The Lord is my shepherd.
It's that time. Looking at my Rolly.
It's about that time.
That what you're listening to is Esther Rowe, I Can Feel Him Moving, from her 1975 gospel album.
The Garden of My Mind.
Yes. Wow. Esther played the mom on Good Times, right. And she played on Maude and many other shows. But here at the We Sound Crazy podcast, Dr. Jones, we love and celebrate Esther Rowe.
Yeah.
People sometimes don't acknowledge her contribution to the arts and entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we named an award after Esther Rowe that we give out in every episode, the Esther Rowe Black Excellence Award.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And it's something that we've honored so many amazing people.
Yeah.
So many. Mm. People that are underserved, would you say, who don't necessarily get the recognition?
Yeah. It's for the entertainer, the artist. It's not relegated to just music. It's actors. It's people in entertainment field who we feel don't get the recognition they deserve for their contribution to the arts.
Mm-hmm.
We've nominated and given it to many people, but we try to reserve for people that we feel like, how dare we not be giving this person their flowers? That's what it's about. Mm-hmm. So every week we nominate, we all throw out a nomination. Each of us throw out someone that we think is deserving, and then between the four of us, we vote and see who wins. Mm-hmm. So you're a part of the nomination and winning ceremony, I suppose. Phil, why don't you set it off so he can understand?
Yeah, we really got to do this. I mean, I know it's our segment every week. Yeah. The bylaws do state you can do this. The bylaws do state that I can do this, and I have to put a formal nomination on the table, on the floor. Dr. Bobby Jones.
I agree.
I know.
I
second that nomination.
I third
The receipts is a CVS level receipt. It's just music.
I agree.
Television, Broadway,
records.
I was gonna say earlier, if you should listen to this conversation 10 times just to get all the details that are in there. But there was a history of BET, but there was a history of Black music, American music, all the way in there.
Yeah.
The story of Dorsey and the music and the sheet music, that literally is how American music was birthed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Period.
Period.
You don't get any of pop or rock and roll or jazz without that origin. That literally gospel is running and telling the good news, that literally spreading from town to town the good news.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's no other person to get the Irby this week.
Yeah. To me. So, Timon, I'm voting. He designated his vote to me in his absence. Shout out to Timon Bacon, our co-host. This week, congratulations, Dr. Bobby Jones.
We honor you.
You are the recipient of the Esther Rowe Black Excellence Award here at the We Sound Crazy podcast. We celebrate you.
Could be more than that.
Thank you.
Legend.
Thank you. I hope I'm going to live a little while.
You will, man.
You absolutely will.
Well, I have a birthday next week.
And, really?
I'll be 84.
Wow.
And, here I am last night with these stars, and then this coming Thursday, I'm at Lane College with the Bobby Jones Day at Lane College.
I love that.
Wow.
And it's just one after the other.
It's deserving.
Yeah, because you went in St. Louis last night. I didn't get to connect the dots. I mean, we acknowledge St. Louis, East St. Louis, Chuck Harmony. We got to, acknowledge, he was, Dr. Jones was out there with Tashina Arnold, right?
Yeah.
For an event.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. You still moving and grooving. Show on Impact Weekly Radio, syndicated radio show. You do it every morning, right? Morning radio show?
Every day, morning and afternoon.
Wow, morning and afternoon?
In Nashville, it comes on at 8 o'clock in the morning, but it's an AM station.
Incredible.
But we have AM and FM, basically. Some markets is AM. Most of the markets
Incredible.
Are AM.
It don't stop. It does not stop.
Yeah. American Urban Radio Networks. Y'all heard of it?
Absolutely. It's just inspiring to see the passion continue, the fire continue, the excitement,
gratitude.
Your energy about all of this right now was so genuine and so excited, as if I didn't know you when it was the first day, but it feels like it's the same. And it's rare to meet people that aren't jaded by, it's also a tough business and you go through a lot. And so it's beautiful to see someone that's done so much also be so gracious and so generous with your time and with your information and your stories, but also just excited about gospel music, excited about music. I've learned a lot.
Yeah, okay.
I've learned a lot about how to live. Yeah, it's a lesson on how to live.
You got to come to one of our recordings.
Anytime.
Yeah, I will.
You too.
Yeah.
Anytime.
This next one that we're going to do, there's a choir coming called the Florida Super Choir.
I know it's going to be good.
You know, I stole it from Atlanta. It was Atlanta Super Choir. Okay. They went to Europe to do something. I don't know. And that's what they called it.
Mm.
And I said, Nashville, I'm going to put a choir together. And I'm like, what am I going to call them? I don't know. And
Nashville,
I
said, Nashville Super Choir.
So it's not original, you know.
But it's passed on now because there's a Florida Super Choir.
Yeah, the Florida Super Choir, yeah.
Please let us know.
Next Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
The day before my birthday. My birthday is next Sunday.
All right, we'll be there.
Let's pull up.
I'm very serious about this.
Yeah, let's do it. Road trip locally.
Okay. Local road trip. We do it at my Zion in any.
My church, for the record, everybody. I go to church. If people don't think I go to church, I do go to church.
It's questionable.
My bishop is Bishop Joseph Warren Walker III.
So yeah. Right. It's the one on Murfreesboro Road.
Okay.
Antioch, they call it.
Okay, Antioch. Yeah.
Yeah, and we have a new artist that come in to sing. That's what I present now.
I'm very excited about
this. It's incredible.
Next Saturday, I'm excited.
This is so great. And just, Dr. Jones, thank you for being the trailblazer, not only in gospel music, but just like you said, Claude, American music.
Yeah. American music.
You really trailblazed on the music front, television, and so much. You've done so much. So we celebrate you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just thank you. I have to say that. Just I stand on your shoulders, and the seats and the opportunities I've had are because of people like yourself. And I thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You pulled something out of me today that scares me. Oh my God.
We may sound crazy, but we're not crazy.
People are
going to love it.
Special shout out to our partners at the National Museum of African American Music.
Oh, yeah.
The NAMM.
Check out blackmusicmuseum.org for more details. Shout out to our producer, Guru.
Making us sound so good.
Making us sound amazing. And follow us on all platforms at We Sound Crazy.
Absolutely. I feel like we can't leave without acknowledging your t-shirt.
Oh, my t-shirt. What is it?
Love black people like you love black music.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Isn't that good?
Love
me like you love
my music.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's a great, I mean, come on.
Gospel Music Heritage Month. We couldn't have celebrated it in a better fashion.
No, it's the best.
Thank you, Dr. Bobby Jones. Yes. We're going to go out on a song, whatever you tell us the song is, we're going to send our listeners out on your musical selection. What do you want to hear?
Frankie Beverly and...
I like it. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's go. Yeah, man.
Sunshine and rain.
Yes.
Sunshine and rain.
I love it. Until next time, We Saw Crazy Podcast, your official backstage pass for all things music and culture. Until next week.
I like sunshine.